Do you get a lot of stuff just like shipped to you from everywhere, or do you actually go out and try to buy it yourself?
I actually go out and buy it myself. That's one of the big things. I think I've gotten in my collection maybe about two or three bottles from distilleries, but for the most part, it's always been myself purchasing bottles.
Man alive, you're doing it wrong then.
Hey everyone, it's Kenny here. We really hope you enjoy these podcasts. I'm sure you know that this is a labor of love for us, so we're launching a Patreon sponsorship. Patreon is like crowdfunding, but for supporting your favorite grassroots entertainment. We want to show our love for you as well. We have different donation levels set up, so $1 a month gets you Patreon-only content, such as outtakes and additional audio that take place before and after recording. For $3 a month, we're going to send you a Bourbon Pursuit branded koozie with an awesome tagline that was chosen by our very own followers on Twitter and Facebook. We're also going to send you some Bourbon Pursuit stickers that you can slap on your laptop, guitar case, car window, wherever. For $5 a month, you get a limited edition Bourbon Pursuit t-shirt, as well as get into a monthly drawing for a free bottle of booze or maybe some swag from one of our guests. There's even more awesome stuff. So please, if you like the show, support us, and we're going to send you some cool stuff in return. Visit patreon.com. That's patreon.com/bourbonpursuit.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Bourbon Pursuit podcast. Just Kenny here tonight. Ryan can't join us. Ryan is on vacation down in Florida. He's down there hunting for some bourbon. That's if you were listening last week on the community roundtable, he was trying to get some secrets out of Blake of trying to figure out when BTAC was going to be released down there. So he's probably hitting up ABCs and everything like that. But even in Kentucky this week, for anybody that hasn't paid attention to Blake's posting on his the Pappy hunt, well, it has finally hit in Kentucky. It's now here. The hunt is harder and harder and harder. So we're starting to find that out the hard way from all the group of friends that we're in and trying to figure out how we can finagle our way into talking to some liquor store owners and everything like that. It's just getting harder and harder. Came away so far with a 10. That's all I've got so far. So I can't complain, but hey, it's something at the end of the day. And you got to wait around for some of the raffles to come. And it just seems like that's what most owners think. That's the most fair way to go. But to each his own. So with that, I want to kind of go ahead and just move along, and because really our show today isn't going to be talking about anything that's limited releases or anything like that, but really it's talking about how do you look at a particular whiskey or scotch or bourbon and really know should you go out and buy it? Our guest tonight has probably reviewed every single bourbon or whiskey or scotch that you've seen on the shelf. And you can watch his reviews. So tonight we have Chris Trevino. Chris is the man that's known as Liquor Hound, or what we would call the YouTube sensation of Liquor Hound. So Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Kenny.
So before we get started on what you do and some of the things that are part of it, kind of talk about how you got started in just whiskey in general.
Okay. So my story kind of goes back quite a ways. Actually, it was probably about 20 years ago when my buddy started. Actually, I started with tequila because my buddy would go down to Mexico to visit his family. He'd bring back bottles of tequila. And so I started, I wasn't really drinking, tasting anything back then. So I ended up having like 20 bottles of tequila. And next thing you know, I got into whiskeys. And then I started getting into rums. I started covering every category. But whiskeys are the ones that really started hitting my, the core of me. Those are the ones that really kind of burnt a little fire and got it going as far as, really wanting to learn more and really diving hard into learning distillation techniques or learning the history behind scotch and, bourbon as well, American whiskeys. And so that probably started probably about 15 years ago, really, for me.
And so was it just something about the brown water that made you like it, or was just, because you said you started with tequila, and believe me, I'm not what I would call a tequila connoisseur by any means, but I know it wasn't Jose Cuervo. And I know that, tequila and whiskey are two very, very different, sides of the ballpark here. Right. So what kind of made you do that switch? Was it just because the whiskeys taste better? Or did you have something that was like, oh, there's a lot more heritage happening here? Like, what was that, maybe a big turning point there?
It was kind of an evolution of my growing, I think, as a spirit enthusiast, I guess, or collector. Because once I had gotten enough tequilas, I wanted to kind of broaden out and kind of expand the bar. And that's when I got into bourbons. But like I said, when I got into bourbons, it's just that, just the overall flavor profiles. They're bigger. They're usually more complex than tequila. And so it was those type of characteristics that really drew me in. Single malts the same way. They're doing that. They're still amazing me to this day, just like a lot of bourbons are.
So I want you to talk a little bit about what is Liquor Hound, because some people might not have heard of it before. So I want to give all of our listeners an idea of what it is you actually do.
Right. Okay. So Liquor Hound is actually started, again, probably around 2010, I think is when I began. And what I had been doing was I was growing this collection and it was getting pretty large. And so I wanted to look on YouTube and see what other people are doing, because I knew I couldn't be the only one with this, a collection of spirits. So I went on there and it was like one or two guys and that was it. And I was like, there's got to be more. So I figured, well, if I can't watch the videos, I guess I'll start shooting the videos. And so my very first one was just a little overall review of my collection at the time. And then I actually started getting requests to review bourbons, review rums, review different spirits. And so that's when I started getting online, shooting videos, reviewing bottles at a time, or in the beginning, it would be like 10 vodkas at a time or something like that, something crazy. I kind of slowed that down now, but that's what I do. A lot of video reviews. I also do a lot of consultation for some distilleries, restaurants and bar consultations. I do private tasting classes and educational classes. Bourbon right now, that's the one that I seem to be doing a lot of, a matter of fact.
Is it because there's just a big bourbon boom? Do you think it just has more popularity? Are more Scotch drinkers switching to bourbon or vice versa? What do you think? What do you think contributes to that?
I think it's mainly the bourbon boom and also the fact that it's, America's spirit. So the historical aspect of it is kind of bleeding into our culture, and where people are enjoying bourbon. And of course, the boom's happening at the same time. So they want to learn more. And so they, they look for, they're thirsty for that education, for that experience. And when someone like me can actually present, maybe a tasting of a rare bottle, let's say, that's something that most people sadly now has become very hard to do, BTAC Pappy, like we all try to and love to find, but it's hard for even people like myself to get now. So it's, it's a rare luxury type thing, almost situation, to be able to taste that and share with your friends.
So let's talk about your stats real quick. So how many whiskeys do you have and how many videos have you done?
Okay, so I think I'm at 101 videos, and I actually shot one the other day when my lapel mic died on me. So I had to reshoot that probably tomorrow. But I think right now on the whiskey front, I'm sitting at something like 350 bourbons. And what are my Scotch count? I'm trying to remember. I think it's something like another 300 or something on the single malts. So about 600 or so.
Just 600 bottles on the shelf, it's nothing, right? So it sounds like you've got some room for more videos to come then.
Definitely more room for videos. The overall collection right now is just about to crack 2,400 bottles in total.
Oh, wow.
So got a lot of bottles, but I just need to get the time to shoot those videos.
Now, is that inclusive of tequilas and rums and all that kind of thing as well?
Exactly. And that also includes backup bottles, because, sometimes when you have those great ones come out, you want to pick up one or two so you don't run out.
So I don't even want to ask, is this all in your house or do you have a storage unit? There's no way that's in a house, right?
In a house. It's in a house. I'm trusting that at no storage facility.
So you must have a very, I guess you'd say, forgiving significant other then.
Yes, and I have a very full closet.
So let's talk about some of the reviews in themselves. Do you consider yourself like a sommelier of whiskey?
Well, kind of. I am certified specialist of spirits, so I do have that qualification title. But actually, when I took that test, I was actually surprised at kind of how easy that was. I was kind of wishing it was more like the wine side of things where they were doing levels, you know, a first level, a second level, third level type thing. I passed that. It was, like I said, easy. So I, all my studying and all my reading on the backgrounds of all these spirits, I think I'm definitely in that category. And it's something that I would like to try to find a course that would, or a certification. I want certifications where people with the love of spirits can get, you know, graduate type certifications, you know.
And I guess a lot of that tasting, I mean, let's talk about, I guess, your process, right? Because, you know, you have a simple tasting with you on YouTube. However, these videos take a solid 10 or 15 minutes a piece. So kind of talk us about your process of what you go through in a typical video.
Okay. So the first thing I always like to do is try to talk a little bit about the history behind that bottle, whether that be the rarity of the actual juice inside it or maybe the distillery that it came from. As you know, a lot of these bourbons or American spirits come from closed distilleries nowadays, or some of it mixed in. So, you know, people want to hear that aspect of it. Once we do that, then I'll usually already have the glass poured and breathing a little bit so that by the time I get to the nosing, it's kind of relaxed and calmed down. And I'll go through the nosing of the whiskey, and I usually try to keep it very simplistic. And it's not only because for myself, but also for viewers. I always appreciate honesty and simplicity when it comes to reviews. You know, I've heard some reviews that, you know, they get out of hand, and it's like, you know, I've never had that. I don't even know what that tastes like, you know, and it's confusing. So I try to keep it very simple. And then when I get to the actual tasting part, it's, you know, I mean, you want me to talk about how I actually run it over the palate and all that type of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of talk a little bit more in depth, right? I mean, maybe you're giving away some trade secrets,
it's kind of like a fine cognac. Like they'll always tell you a cognac, you're supposed to take like a small bit when you first introduce it to your palate, just a small drop or two on your tongue, kind of roll it around. And then you go in for that bigger sip. So you'll always see me. I know I used to preach it a lot in my early videos of don't ever judge that first sip, because that first one's just a little coating, get the viscosity feel. And then that second one is where you're actually starting to judge. I'm starting to feel what that viscosity is and how it enters. Is it creamy? Is it sharp? Is it thin? You know, is it oily and viscous? And once we're past that part, then I start trying to identify the initial flavors, the mid palate flavors, and the finishing. How long is it? Is it drying, bitter, tannic? What kind of cinnamon? Is it a sharp cinnamon like a Saigon cinnamon, or is it a nice, easy baking type of cinnamon? You know, different qualifications like that is what I'm looking for.
So I want to talk a little bit about your background with that too, because I'm back on episode 30. We had talked to Robert and Tom from Aroma Academy Sensory Training, and I kind of want to talk to you. Were you kind of like self-taught, or did you go to a class? Like, how did you learn to start pulling out these scents? Because I'm starting to get into it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And of course we're always like, oh, caramel and vanilla. That smells like every bourbon that's on the market. Right. So I guess kind of talk about what, you know, how you kind of got to that point where you can start pulling out those scents or those flavors.
Well, I think one of the biggest helps for me happened to be one of those wines sensory type kits that you could get. I think I have one that had something like 200 or 250 little vials, and each one would have, you know, a different scent to it. And so you could kind of train and work your nose on, you know, what all those different scents kind of smell like. And then sometimes you run into like a lot of different oak type characters in bourbon. So you might get cedar, you might get a eucalyptus type effect or something like that. So in those cases, if you don't find them in those little vials, you can just go to your local supermarket usually and find, you know, different herbs or something you've never had and kind of pick it up, smell it, you know, maybe taste it a little bit or buy it and taste it if it's, you know, if you really need to learn, buy a lot of it. But that's usually how I learn. Just
gives me an excuse to buy a Hershey's bar if you need to be like, I need to understand how the chocolate tastes again, right?
Exactly.
So, I mean, I guess a good question is with you, you know, I kind of said like, caramel and vanilla, like that's the kind of scent that we get kind of off of everything. I mean, do you get tired of always saying it smells like caramel and vanilla? I mean, what are some of the more common scents that you get out of a lot of these different whiskeys?
The most common ones are, you're exactly right. It's caramel, vanilla, sometimes butterscotch, but usually always some level of brown sugar. Those are the main ones, those sweet, rich, fudgy type aromatics and tastes.
So talk about some of the glasses that you use, because sometimes you use Glencairn, sometimes you use some whatever kind of taller stem ones. Because I know that we've talked about it before, that the way that it sits in the glass, the density, it affects the aroma and all the other kind of things. So kind of talk about that a little bit.
Okay. So for a long time, I was using Glencairns, and I still, that's like the go-to glass. It seems like it's a really well-rounded glass to use. I have some of the neat glasses. I have some of the new Norlin glasses. Have you heard of those? Yeah.
Yeah, kind of talk about that real quick, because maybe a lot of people don't know about it.
Okay, so the Norlin glass is almost like the shape of a tumbler, except that it's almost like a double-walled tumbler. So the outside is the size of a, again, let's say the word tumbler, and then we'll throw a Glencairn on the inside of it. And you connect the two, and it's all blown glass. So you get this little, almost like an insulating wall. And then at the very bottom, the most unique characteristic to the Norlin glass, it has these little bumps, almost like little ridges on the inside of that Glencairn, so that when you're swirling the whiskey, it's actually creating more aeration and kind of releases those molecules a little more up into the air so that you're able to get a little bigger nose. And that's the selling point on it. What I found on that glass is it doesn't really work very well for the majority of the lower proof spirits. That's what I have personally felt. I think if you're talking now, the one whiskey that does work phenomenally in it happens to be Scotch whiskey, and that would be Islay whiskeys in particular. Those smoky, big, peaty whiskeys kind of need that room to breathe and aerate. To whereas some bourbons, I find that the Glencairns are best unless they are high proof. If you're talking cask strength bourbon, that's when I like to use those tall stem. They're modeled after the Eich glass, the German glass company. And those glasses, very expensive. I think you can get them on bedbathandbeyond.com for something like $150 or so for two. Yes. And they're very delicate. And I didn't like that. I've gone to, I'm part of the Dallas Single Malt Society. And when we're there, there's some guys there that have the real Eich glasses. And they do make a difference on high cask strength spirits. So when you're doing a single malt in a Glencairn and then you do it in that glass as well, you'll notice a pretty appreciative difference.
Wow. I didn't expect that.
Yeah. Now, like I said, the ones I use are not the Eich. They're actually by, I think it's like Luigi. I can't remember the last name of that company. I get them on Amazon. But they're like six for like $50. They're not very expensive. I think they're Vinotech. So if you look up Vinotech Spirit Snifter on Amazon, that's where they are.
So with the glasses, is there a go-to that you, I mean, you said Glencairn's kind of your go-to. What makes you decide to go with whether the tall stem or the Glencairn or start with an N again?
Norlin.
Yeah. I want to say like New Orleans, but you know how I always say it, like Narlins. Yeah, kind of, yeah, I'll just say it like that.
Well, the Glencairn, like I said, that's no problem. If you're going to run a cask strength in there, you're going to be okay. It may push you out of that glass a little bit because of the amount of heat and that alcohol. I'll usually choose the tall stem, more tulip-shaped bowl if it's going to be cask strength. That's usually where I'll go to for those. If it's not cask strength, I'm usually just going to go straight into a Glencairn. If it's an Islay whiskey, and I have to say this, I haven't given the Norlin glass enough chance, I will say that, because I haven't run a lot of bourbons through it. I haven't run a lot of single malts through it. I've run a few Highland malts, a few bourbons, and a lot of Islays through it. And that's the one, like I said, I found that really works well.
So I want to talk about, you know, we're at the point now where you're taking a drink. Now, for every bottle that you have, I've noticed that they're usually already cracked open at some point. So have you already tried them beforehand before you record? Or is it kind of like you pour a little out for the homies and then you take it for recording?
What I'll usually do is when I first crack a bottle, I'll usually be with a couple of friends. And so we'll taste it together. And so you'll see that level down. I may have only had a half ounce. It may have been a week before I shoot the video, but usually I do have a little pre-tasting. But as far as the actual day of the shoot, no, I don't taste beforehand. I just go ahead and go right on into it. There are some instances, some videos I've done where I have, you know, immediately just come home with a bottle, set it all up, crack that bottle, and just shot the review. And to me, it's the same either way, because I'm unbiased. Even if I taste it a week before or the day before, I don't write notes or keep anything like that. So it's always off the top of my head how it's hitting me.
So it also seems that when you're taking a drink and you take your sip, maybe it's your second sip, right? Because you always said never judge it by the first. But it seems like you're always like maybe like rolling your tongue or something like that. Are you doing that to maybe get some more after flavors or anything like that? So kind of talk about part of that process.
So what I'll do is once I take it in and I've ran it across my palate and got that viscosity reading, I'll go ahead and just let it go down. And then what I'll start doing is taking little breaths in. So through my mouth, just little puff in and going out my nose. So you'll see me on the videos, you know, kind of.
Kind of like you lost your breath a little bit, right?
Just kind of. And I'm just searching for those little aromatics, those other smells that are going to come through. So, yeah, that's what I do.
It is almost like comical at times, right? Because if you watch yourself, you're kind of like maybe like, oh, I kind of look like an idiot. I'm sitting there just like taking these small deep breaths or whatever it is.
But. Yeah, but that's how I developed it, you know, and that's how I find I can pull the most out of it. And I've been doing that from day one. The other thing that I didn't mention of when it comes to nosing, of course, most of y'all already know, when it comes to nosing a bourbon or any spirit for that matter, you need to have your lips parted, you know, kind of breathe in through your nose and your mouth at the same time. Kind of just helps regulate that heat and lets you pull in more.
So I've noticed also sometimes you add water every once in a while. So I want to talk about it because it started in some of the later episodes. Talk about some of the water that you use and the amount of drops you put into a whiskey. That's, you know, and how many drops do you put in depending on whether it's just you go with 5, you go with 10, like what's the magic number?
Great, great question. So for me, what I usually like to do is I used to use spring water, never use distilled because distilled strips the minerals from the water and it actually can make the whiskey tastes a little weird sometimes if you use distilled. So I like to use spring water. Recently, I've been switching to the old limestone water from Kentucky. You can get it on Amazon. It's like $10 for 750 milliliters, which is crazy for water. But, you know, what are you going to do? I don't live near there now. But I get that water in. I have my little droppers. I actually have one, you know, just you can get those on Amazon as well. Just little droppers. And what I'll end up doing is putting depends on the proof. Again, if it's an 80 proof bourbon, maybe just a drop, just to crack it and see how it's going to feel. If it's a very soft, like a wheater, then sometimes I don't feel like it needs water. If it's just so good on its own and doesn't need any water, great. If it needs to be a little too spicy or maybe it's a little tight, then drop a water in there. It'll help just release it and open it up right away. The other thing is if it's a higher proof bourbon, that's when you're going to need to add more water. So could be, let's say we're talking 110 proof. You know, I might need to add 3 drops to start, you know, just to kind of crack it and let it start to relax. Give it a few minutes because if when you first add that water, the first thing that it's going to typically release is a lot of oak characters. So if you add water to a whiskey and then you swirl it and you taste it, that oak might seem too big. So give it a few minutes to relax, calm back down, and then taste it. And that oak will kind of recede back and you'll get everything a little bit more. Maybe the cinnamon will drop off. Maybe the fruits and the floralness might pop a little more. But water can really play a big difference in whiskeys.
Yeah. So I've also noticed that you'll taste it first. You'll taste it in its raw form, barrel proof, whatever it is. And then maybe this is why the videos are also like 10 to 15 minutes long too, is you'll also do like a second tasting with it while you add water in to see if any of the flavors change, right? Yeah. Or wrong.
Exactly. That's exactly right. So I know my wife is always on me about the length of the video. Do not make them too long, you know, and I totally get that. But some whiskeys, you know, like the new Booker's Rye that just came out when I shot that review, you know, that whiskey needs to have water added. Like I need to give the review as it is straight from the bottle, as it was straight from the barrel, but I also need to do the review with water so that everybody can see, does it change? Does it get better? You know, that type thing.
I'll be honest. I watched probably like 5 videos today, and watching a guy sniff a glass for 15 minutes has never been more entertaining. So I like the longer videos, right? I mean, I think it's something where you're not boring anybody to death either, right? You're constantly talking the whole entire thing. It's not like we're just sitting there, just like standing on the edge of our seat, like, what's he going to say next? It's constant, right? So you're able to keep pushing out good information. So I do like that.
Thank you.
So you also talk about in some of when you're talking about the taste, you know, you talk about wood, you talk about oak, you also talk about tannins a lot. Yes. And for somebody like me that isn't very well versed in knowing exactly what they're trying to pick out, kind of explain to me and some of the listeners as well, like, what is a tannin?
Okay, so tannin is really, to me, the way I kind of describe tannins when I'm talking to a group of people is going to be like when the oak is pressed too hard. And what I mean by that is when whiskey is put into the barrel, you know, and it's going to start to breathe in that barrel as it cools, it's going to contract, and that whiskey that gets squeezed into the wood when it's hot is going to contract back out. And it's that breathing of the barrel that imparts the color. It's going to impart all those vanilla, that caramel, all those flavors that you're going to get from a whiskey that does not taste like a white dog. Those characters are coming from the wood. And when they're done right, you don't get a lot of oak, a lot of tannins. It's so sweet. It's so nice and round with maybe a little bit of a very clean oak. But when that wood is pressed too hard and maybe it's maturing too hot, or which happens to be the case a lot in Texas, a lot of our bourbons are maturing too hot. So they breathe so hard and they're pulling so much from that wood that I think they end up pulling too much from the wood. Some of the negative characteristics, those being the tannins, because what tannins will come like off on the palate is they're going to be contributing bitterness. They're going to be contributing a drying palate, dryness on the finish, stuff like that. Sometimes you can get a green wood effect, kind of like a new lumber type character. That's another oak, to me, kind of a flaw in a whiskey. But that's what I'm always searching for in tannins is, you know, is it pulling too hard from that wood? Is it pulling those tannins, that bitterness, that drying type quality?
I might put you on the spot here. So I guess kind of give our listeners an idea of like what's a bourbon that's like readily available on the shelves that would have like what you would consider like a very high tannin taste profile to it versus one that is more well-rounded so they can sit there and try them side by side to kind of understand like how do we pull that specific flavor out of it?
Well, you know, the tannin part of it is one that the distilleries don't want. You know, typically they do not want that in their bourbon. So I'm trying to think on the low end. The one that immediately came to mind would be like, it's usually in older whiskeys. Because again, when they're in that wood a long time and that barrel has given all that it's got to give, and if it stays in there, it'll start just pulling out whatever's left. And a lot of times that is drying tannins. And so if you look at maybe bottles like, let's see, without throwing too many people under the bus, let's see, maybe Orphan Barrel Old Blowhard kind of comes to mind, that 26-year-old bourbon. That to me was a little dry on the back end. Some of the tannins were coming through, not horribly, but it was noticeable. Another one would be the probably the Evan Williams 23. Evan Williams 23. That's another one that I've had a few times, few different bottles, and it always just seemed to be over-oaked. And you'll get that. That's a quality of, to me, of a tannic type environment is over oaked, over wooded bourbon. That's when you're starting to pull the negatives out of that barrel. But to think of one that's on the shelf besides those two at a more reasonable cost.
Elijah Craig, when it still had the 12-year age statement, was that sort of still well balanced or over tannin? Like what would you think about? Ooh. Just because I'm thinking of something that's an age stated thing that's out there, that's kind of a higher age statement. That's the only one that comes to my mind.
Yeah. I would probably say that one could possibly do it, but their batches were usually pretty consistent. I mean, I loved the EC 12 for forever, still do. The ones that I'm thinking, maybe some Texas bourbons. If you ever taste a Texas bourbon, they'll be very rich in the fresh ground corn type character. That's like a dead giveaway for a Texas bourbon. But after you get past that ground corn character, then the first next thing you're going to get is a high heat level, almost like on the level of a Booker's, let's say. that high spice, high heat. And then on that back end, to me, I tend to get some drying notes, just dark chocolate type characters. And that's, so I guess, you know, Texas bourbon comes to mind.
Harrison Brothers is really the only one around here that we can find pretty readily available.
Yeah, Garrison Brothers has been doing better. I know the 2015, they finally, I think they're doing away with the fall spring releases. You know, for a long time, I used to know Dan and talk to Dan, and he would tell me that they were kind of targeting two different flavor profiles for the fall and the spring. They said the spring release, they were going for a more floral, easy drinking bourbon. And then in the fall, they were going for that spicier, warmer bourbon to, you know, kind of keep you warm and through the cold winter months. But in 2015,
those cold winter months in Texas, right?
Yeah. Those icy, we get those icy weeks, maybe we're lucky, but that's what he was shooting for. And it was always kind of odd to me because, you know, you get, okay, well, I like the springs, so I guess I only buy in the spring. But now he's finally gotten to one where he's just doing a 20 vintage, 2015, 2016. And it's definitely a better rounded bourbon. Yeah. His aren't too bad as far as the tannins. They're definitely there. But again, I don't throw anybody specifically under the bus.
It's all good. So what I've also noticed in some of your videos is that, or actually mostly all your videos, is that you don't actually like rate a whiskey at the end of it. Is there a reason behind that?
Yeah, well, so I know I used to get asked to do ratings a lot, and it's all so subjective to me. Like when I was watching other people's reviews and seeing how they were giving ratings, Malt Advocate or, you know, all those other magazines and stuff, it's subjective. They would give something maybe an 80 score and I might love it. There's some things I love and people don't love. So it's, I don't want to really want to give it a score. I'll tell you whether or not I think it's really good. If it's very good, average, usually if I don't review it, it possibly could be because I don't like it. That's not the case. That's not why I haven't shot all my bourbons. But I know if I come across something I do not like, then I just don't want to review it because I don't want to be on camera, you know, just, there will be those people out there that love that. And I don't want to, I'm not that guy. So,
right. You know, you want to tell them their baby's ugly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, I would consider, and that's what you were actually requested by one of our listeners to have you on as a guest. And I think it's pretty easy to say that you have a pretty refined and good palate. Do you do any like private barrel picks for stores around Dallas or anything like that?
I do. Matter of fact, I've done a few for True Spirits up in Plano. So that's a really good store up in our area. It's a mom and pop type store. It's not a big chain. Like we have Specs and Goody Goody and Total Wine. But I've done some barrel picks for him. I've also helped in barrel picks at a few other little small local spots. And recently I actually went to Miami to actually mix a barrel of rum. I know it's not bourbon, but I was sent down there to mix a barrel of rum for him as well. So they do enjoy it. Yeah.
That sounds like fun. So I guess we'll kind of wrap it up a little bit. So we'll kind of finish off with two questions here. So we know that your collection's expansive at this point. So you've kind of grown from tequilas to the whiskey side. Now, just in the whiskey side, what do you prefer, scotch or bourbon? And you can feel biased since you're on the Bourbon Pursuit podcast.
Yes, of course. It would have to be bourbon. You know, that's my big love in this world. Actually, to be honest with you, I have more bourbons than I do scotch. And that's because I was totally in love with bourbon and still am, I was fascinated for years. I think I spent 3 or 4 years solidly on bourbon. And that's how I used to do my collection was I would spend a year on, and I know this is rough sounding for some people, I would spend a year on vodka, just buying, learning about vodka. And then I'd spend a year on gin. And then I'd spend, you know, like I said, 3 or 4 years on bourbon. And I think I spent about 2 and on scotch. And I'm still now I'm to the point where I don't have to focus as much, but I still buy from every category, you know.
Right. And you were in it early enough because I've watched your videos of the top 10 bourbons that you've had of all time. And you've got your Pappy 23 decanters and your PHC golden anniversary. So you've been around it long enough that you got some unicorns sitting around there.
Yeah, I remember buying Pappy 10, you know, when it was the paper label squatties on the shelf, you know, and I could drive around I remember spending one day driving around Dallas. And I think I picked up like 5 or 6 of them. It was no big deal. They were just, they're there. Of course, now it's insane. You can't do that anymore.
The way it is. So last question, any reviews coming up that our listeners can look forward to?
Yeah, this one right here. This one's going to be coming up very soon. Let's see if we can see it.
Go ahead. Mostly is audio, so kind of tell everybody what it is.
The Rebel Yell 10-year single barrel. So that just hit our shelves probably this week here in Dallas. Really blown away by it. Man, I mean, they did such a solid pick. And that's coming from Luxco, and they're sourcing out of Heaven Hill. So it's a wheater, bottled, I think, at 100 and what are we at? 100 proof, which is not bad, but very, very good bourbon for only like $45. It was a really good buy.
Oh, awesome. I guess I should have passed up on that. I can probably go find it hopefully somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. Chris, I want to say thank you for joining the podcast tonight. So if anybody that wants to know more about you, where do they watch your videos? How do they find them? Tell them how to do that.
All right. So you can find me probably best, and you can also message me there on YouTube. It's just youtube.com/liquorhound, or just search liquorhound, one word, on there. And that's where you can see all my videos. And like I said, feel free to message me with comments or questions, and I always try to answer as quickly as I can.
Well, fantastic. And you're also on Twitter at LiquorHound and a few other different social media places, right?
Facebook as well. I have a LiquorHound page there. I have my personal page, Chris Trevino, there. And that's who I am. That's what I do.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for being on the show tonight. Make sure you follow him on all those great social media channels. Bourbon Pursuit's also on YouTube, but it's basically just a rehash of everything you're listening to now. So if you need to yet another way to listen to our podcast while you're sitting at your office, you can always get them on YouTube as well. But also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Bourbon Pursuit. If you like what you hear, make sure you support the show. That's it's on Patreon, patreon.com/Bourbon Pursuit. And this month, all of our October pledges have been done. And so for our October giveaway, we will be having a bottle of 4-year Willett Family Estate that we'll be giving away to all of our, or not all of our listeners, but one lucky listener. So I want to say thank you, everybody that has supported us. It's been tremendous so far. Working on getting t-shirts done as well. So you'll be seeing those and those emails coming up pretty soon. But lastly, Chris, want to say thank you again. And if anybody else has any more show suggestions, make sure you get back at us. And we'll see you all next week.
This podcast of Bourbon Pursuit is in partnership with thewhiskeywash.com, a lifestyle website for news and reviews for people who like whiskey, and for those who think a life without whiskey has no style, thewhiskeywash.com.